Hi, and welcome to the Kubernetes podcast from Google. I'm your host, Craig Box. Oh, hello, you. Not going to lie, I've missed you. I know it's been a while. I hope you didn't mind that I needed a little break in these uncertain times. I trust you looked after yourself while I was gone. Are you staying dry? Hard to imagine, but both sides of my planet were underwater this week. Earlier this year, I brought you a few episodes from Nelson in New Zealand. Had I been there, I would have been evacuated this week, as the Maitai River burst its banks in a once-in-a-hundred-year event, which I imagine we're going to see many more of over the next decade. It's winter over there, but weren't you having a summer holiday, you ask? Well, the way climate change has chosen to assert itself over the UK recently was 3 days of heatwave, followed by 3 days of solid rain. Yes, we desperately needed the rain, but we didn't really need it to be pulled up on the A40, so you almost went aquaplaning through it. Anyway, I'm going to ask you a favour now. I don't ask much, so hopefully it's not presumptuous of me. If you've missed hearing from me these last couple of weeks, would you like to follow me on Twitter? I don't say a lot, almost never about Kubernetes. I posted a picture of a sheep at the start of my break. I probably took hundreds of photos, but I chose to only share that one. I know, that's award-worthy restraint for a New Zealander, right? Anyway, I'm Craig Box on Twitter, and if enough of you drop by, I might just post a picture of a horse, too. Let's get to the news. Congratulations to all involved in the release of Kubernetes 1.25. 40 enhancements were tracked, including 13 features moving to stable and 15 new features entering in alpha. Listen on to today's interview to learn more. The founding team from Rancher Labs are back with a new startup called Acorn Labs. 1 year after Rancher's acquisition by SUSE, all four founders, including episode 57 guest Darren Shepard, had left the company, with former Rancher CEO Sheng Lang remaining on SUSE's board. All have reassembled to create Acorn, an application packaging and deployment framework for Kubernetes. Shepard's introductory blog talks about the challenge of packaging and deploying apps on top of Kubernetes. It goes on to introduce their solution, an OCI image containing multiple containers and metadata, and the Acorn file, a Docker Compose-inspired method for description of an application without having to talk about infrastructure. Acorn is open source and available to kick the tires in an early alpha/beta version. While it's a quiet news time through most of the tech world, the GKE team has remained hard at work with a number of new releases. The GKE cluster list page now includes a new observability tab. This tab shows infrastructure health metrics such as CPU, memory, container restarts, and control plane metrics. It also provides visibility into ingestion into the Google Cloud Managed Service for Prometheus and the Cloud Logging Service. And while GKE Autopilot has recently become the recommended way to deploy clusters, you can still get power user features in the standard mode. The maximum number of pods that can run on a node has increased to 256, limited only by IP address allocation. Given that Compute Engine now has full IPv6 support, we'll keep an eye on that limit being raised further. The schedule for KubeCon North America 22 was announced earlier this month. In case you were on the fence about attending, you can see the almost 200 sessions that were chosen by the 120-plus members of the program committee. There are also over 80 maintainer sessions, not to mention the 2 days of co-located events that happen ahead of the schedule. If that isn't enough, or if you're salty that your talk wasn't selected, the Cloud Native Rejects Conference will be glad to have you the weekend before. Finally, Deep Dive Blog Post of the Week award goes to Upbound, creators of Crossplane, for their look at a large-scale deployment of custom resource definitions on Kubernetes. Nick Cope summarizes the team's work, solving the basic problem of Crossplane needing one CRD for every API type a cloud has. Before Crossplane, you might expect to have 5 to 6 CRDs installed in your cluster, maybe breaking into double digits if you had the service mesh installed. To get to the scale of thousands, caches, rate limits, and etcd clients had to be tweaked, and the post explains the process, as well as what work remains to be done. And that's the news. Cici Huang is a software engineer on the Google Kubernetes Engine kernel team and the release lead for today's Kubernetes 1.25 release. Welcome to the show, Cici.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start by looking at your introduction to computing. I understand you first got a computer when you were a teenager?
Yes.
What were you using it for?
Back at that time, I was mainly using it for chatting with friends or enjoy chatting with random persons online on some BBS forums and also maybe some game playing stuff.
Did that go down well with your parents?
Not really. While in high school, my parents tried to let me focus more on study, obviously, because they want me to get into a good university. So they used to try to lock the computer so I cannot access. And that's how the journey begins, I guess. I try to hack the computer. Yeah, initially by just guessing the password, but later like try to maybe sneak in another guest account or something like that.
They never physically picked it up and put it somewhere else or locked it with a key?
Oh, that's a good idea. I guess we don't have that many rooms in the house.
Well, you did go into good schools, but you went to study computer science. Was that something that was a common path available to people at the time?
Yes, I guess majoring in computer is quite popular because people started to feel the power of computer, I'll say.
And you went on to do not one but two masters, one in China, one in the US. Was one not enough?
I guess that decision was affected by the fact we are moving to Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
So when we decided to move to United States, it's a rush decision, I'll say. So I didn't really get a lot of time to kind of apply a job. And plus, I feel maybe pure developing work is not what I wanted. So I kind of started applying for other majors related to computer, but not like engineering side.
You moved to the US when your husband was finishing his PhD. Do you have a competition between the two of you? Is two masters better than one PhD?
I don't really think I'm a PhD material at that time, because I always feel like working in the industry is more exciting for me.
I definitely agree. I think that the idea of working for a very long time on putting a tiny, tiny expansion in the bubble of human knowledge, I appreciate people who do it, but it takes a certain special type of person.
Agree.
Your first job in the US was working for IBM, but I understand you also interned for IBM while you were in China.
Yes, it was like a long time back.
Did the company feel like it was the same place?
Not really. Back in China, when I was doing my internship at IBM in college, I was mainly working on the old Rational product, if you still remember.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but when I got the job in United States, IBM put a lot of effort, AI and cloud stuff. So I got the chance to work in IBM Watson, which also not only in the AI side, but also running stuff on cloud.
And winning game shows.
Yes. That's a popular topic at that point.
You bring then a background in both machine learning and cloud to the work that you do. Was the work you were doing in machine learning along with a research team, or was that something that you were interested perhaps in pursuing yourself?
Back then, I was like the team was partnering with a research team. So apparently research team were taking care of all the AI model stuff. And we as an engineering team taking care of making the idea true and maybe maintaining and development them. So I didn't really got a lot of chance to exploring deeply in AI model stuff, I'll say.
Perhaps that, again, that's the difference between the PhDs who do all the thinking and the master's people who actually have the job of making it happen.
Oh, sadly, yes.
One thing you did get experience with at that point was Kubernetes. How did that come into your world?
Oh, sure. But at that time, I didn't really an Kubernetes cluster admin or something, but we do running our service on cloud using Kubernetes for sure. And we're really impressed by the power of Kubernetes.
That then took you to interviewing at Google?
Yes, basically.
Tell me about the process of being matched to a team at Google.
I guess the process changed slightly now, but back then you have to pass the interview and pass the committee and then do team match before you really got the offer. So back then I was doing the team match with multiple teams. And then, of course, my manager from Kubernetes kernel team asked if I would be interested in working in Kubernetes open source stuff. I just immediately said yes.
Is that someone we will know?
Yeah, it's Fede. I'm not sure if you know. It's the currently SIG API machinery chair.
Mm-hmm.
He hired me.
A good choice. Well done, Fede. What was the first thing you worked on when you joined that team?
I guess the first big thing I was working on is the effort of the community, like working towards, which is try to move the entry cloud providers out. So back then I was working in SIG cloud provider and try to make this happen. It's still an ongoing effort, as we could see through like a couple releases. But back then I was mainly working on separate the entry cloud provider from the Kiki base code.
You were the winner of a Kubernetes Development Award in 2020. Was that for that work?
Yes. It's my first time working in the open source community, and that effort is obviously a joint effort, not only inside the Kubernetes open source community, but also has to be partnered with all the cloud providers. So that's an interesting experience.
You are on the kernel team for Google Kubernetes Engine. That's not the operating system kernel, though. What exactly does the kernel team look after?
Oh, yes. I know the name sounds confusing, but we initially named our name as API Machinery, which obviously the majority of the team are working in SIG API Machinery inside Kubernetes community. And then we feel like the API Machinery as a name also sounds confusing for some of the people inside Google specifically. So we kind of updated the name to Kubernetes Kernel Team.
API Machinery makes up about 40% of the Kubernetes code base. I imagine your team does a lot of work on the upstream Kubernetes project in general.
So as Kubernetes Kernel Team, we are not only working on SIG API Machinery, we have the most experienced folks who has been working in upstream Kubernetes community for many, many years. And we have people cross multiple SIGs as a SIG leads or working group leads who are leading the effort. The members in the team is not only focusing API Machinery area, but there are leads in other SIGs as well.
How then did you get involved with the release team process?
Back then, I was actually a maintainer of the Kubernetes sub-repository, and I was trying to cut releases for that. And then I think maybe I could pay more attention on Kubernetes release team to see how I could learn from there.
I think that's the thing, is you show the ability to do something in a small part of the code base, and people say, oh, she's interested in that, and bring you on to the larger part.
Yeah, that's normally how it would work in Kubernetes community, I'll say. Yeah, but then I saw like the release team shadow application from the devs channel, obviously. So I immediately submitted my application, but I didn't got picked at the first time.
Right. So you came in with the release after that?
Yes. That was 1.22.
Having now been with the release team since 1.22, what is the sequence of roles that you went through?
I was an release node shadow at 1.22 and then become release node lead in 1.23. And then become the lead shadow in 1.24. Here I come, the 1.25 release lead.
And today is the day of the 1.25 release, so congratulations, first of all, as always, on the release.
Thank you.
This release includes a total of 40 enhancements, 15 new features entering an alpha, 10 features graduating to beta, and 13 have moved to stable general availability. Two features are being deprecated or removed. Let's start with the removal. We've been going a long time on the process of getting rid of pod security policy, and I understand it's now completely gone.
Yes, there was a discussion going on for quite some time, and the pod security policy was initially deprecated in 1.21, and now with the release of 1.25, it has been removed formally.
The replacement is pod security admission, which graduates to stable in this release. Are you able to track how quickly people stop using deprecated features and start using the new ones as you bring them out?
I don't have a data in handy, but I will encourage people to do it as early as possible. Don't wait until last minute. And also, like, we have announced the pod security policy deprecation for releases back, and due to the community deprecation policy, we keep the support for more than a year. So I hope people would get good use of those by year.
Yes, if it breaks by this point, it's your own fault. You should have been paying attention. We do talk about it on the podcast every time there's a release.
Yes, unfortunately, sometimes people don't pay enough attention until it's out of support or until they have to. That's why we keep shouting.
Indeed. When something breaks, that's generally the first time people will go to try and fix it.
Yeah, that is more caring.
Now, I know we said before that the GKE kernel team is not the Linux kernel team, but I do understand that support for Cgroups v2 in the Linux kernel has graduated to stable in this release. What does that new kernel feature mean to someone who's actually just deploying applications on top of Kubernetes?
So a little bit of background, Cgroup is a low-level Linux kernel, capability, just to do resource management functionality like limiting CPU usage or setting memory limits. And currently with some distributions now defaulting to this API, Kubernetes must support it to continue operating on those distributions. So for all the existing user or the newcoming users, there should not be any notable difference in the user experience when switching to Cgroups v2.
I don't have to rebuild my containers anywhere?
No, not at all.
Another new feature being brought in this release is support for KMS version 2 API for key management. What does that entail?
Oh, yes. The key management service within this release, we introduced the KMS v2 alpha 1 API to add performance rotation and observability improvement. And no user action is required due to this change. We were just trying to address the shortcomings with the previous API.
There are people from many different roles inside the Kubernetes community who come to the release team and specifically to the release lead process. You are coming in from an engineering perspective, and something that I find interesting is that a feature that you are involved in building is actually part of this release. So first of all, tell me what is new with CRD expression validation.
Thanks for asking that. Yeah, I was leading the effort of promoting the CRD validation expression language to beta in this release. Previously, CRD only supported two major built-in validations, CRD structural schemas and OpenAPI v3 validation rules. And for use cases not covered by the previously built-in validation, can only be covered by admission webhooks. But getting validation admission webhooks does not only involve effort on development side, but also a lot of effort on operational wise. So that's how the CRD validation expression language came in place, which offers the power to declare how customer resources are validated using the common expression language. And it was in alpha since two releases back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and now it's mature enough to graduate to beta.
Tell me then about the process, not from the release team, but from a person who is trying to move a feature through. What do you have to do to prove to the team or to the SIG in charge that this thing is ready to make that kind of jump?
First of all, of course, the enhancement update. So we raised the enhancement at the beginning of the release cycle, and we have to get it reviewed by the SIG leads and all the important stakeholders. So after we got an agreement inside of the SIG, which this feature is ready for the next level, and also there are certain requirements from release team side as well, including like the enhancement kind of outline requirement, the review process, the deadline for enhancement phase. And after we got an agreement on the enhancement, then that moves to implementation phase, which we just need to get code in before the code phase.
Do you feel differently about your role on both sides of that? You obviously, as a release team lead, want to see a lot of process there and want to make sure that things are ready to be released. But is it hard for you to say, all right, well, hey, there's all this extra process and work for a thing where I know the code is good and I want to get it out there?
I think being a release team lead definitely helped me there because I'm more familiar with the process than others, I assume. So it definitely helped me there in preparing my enhancement update and keep the milestone deadline in mind.
Did you have to open one window, write a document, and then open a different window and tick a big box that says, yes, I accept this?
I guess basically what I said to myself is, don't raise the exception to myself. And luckily I did.
No, let someone else do that.
Yeah, so I keep my deadline. Yeah.
Aside from your own new enhancement, is there any other personal highlights of this release for you?
I'll say like we got a lot of feature opt-in in this release, even though we have a shorter release in the current release cycle. And we have way more alpha features opt-in in this release. We have, I believe, 15 alpha features in 1.25, which I personally view it as a great sign of the growing power of Kubernetes.
You mentioned a shorter release cycle there. What was the reason for that?
Yeah, as you know, we normally have 3 releases per year for Kubernetes. And as a second release, we have always take the next release schedule into mind because the third release normally will involve things like US holidays or KubeCon happening. And also, as people are aware of, the previous release got delayed for a couple of weeks because of an expected change from Golang side. That's also add up on the delay decision.
So they stole 2 weeks from you, those horrible Golang people.
Oh, by the way, we upgraded the Golang dependency again in this release.
And why not?
Yes.
One thing that has changed with this release is where Kubernetes itself is hosted from. It used to be hosted on a gcr.io domain. It has now moved to registry.k8s.io. What was the reason for that change, and what will it mean for both the Kubernetes team and people who are downloading and installing Kubernetes themselves?
Oh, yes. For many years, we have been using kubernetes.grc.io in all our repositories as the default registry for downloading images from. And now, with this current release, we are switched to use the image promoter process to promote images to the official Kubernetes container registry and using the infrastructure provided by SIG Kubernetes Infra. And for the users who have the old registry in their configurations, need to make the necessary switch.
Is that another thing that will change over time that there's no immediate deprecation for?
We will encourage user to do the switch as soon as possible. And within this effort, we try to host copies of images and binaries nearer to where they're used. So the main switch is already done in this release. So we will encourage user just to make the necessary switch as soon as possible.
So people who are running Kubernetes on places other than Google Cloud, shock horror, how could you? They're actually going to get a better experience with installing Kubernetes?
I'll say maybe not in current switch. We are currently working on adding the AWS support only as of now, but just I'll see in the future it will spread across all the possible cloud providers.
With all of these features, how do you make sure that the community learn about them in the depth that they deserve?
We will be releasing the release multiple release blogs together with the main release. So specifically in this release 1.25, we have 14 feature blogs opt-in and ready to be published within next 1 or 2 months.
That's a lot. You could do one per week and basically it'd be up to 126.
Yeah, that's the new record we have.
The theme for this release is Combiner. I understand your son came up with this theme.
Yes, apparently the theme comes from Transformers, which is my son's favorite.
I was going to say, what kind of conversations are you having with him that he's able to have input on this process at 5 years old?
Actually, I was struggling with the release theme idea till halfway through the release, and I was talking this with my husband at that point, and my son playing with his Transformers aside, and then he was like, what is a logo? What is a theme? I was like, theme is a symbol or anything I try to find to represent the project I'm working on. And my son was like, so it could be anything? I was like, pretty much. And he was like, then you can borrow my Transformers. Just make sure to return them back. I was like, yeah, that's a brilliant idea.
It's a big day for you being the Kubernetes release day, but I understand it's a big day for you tomorrow as well.
Oh, yes. Tomorrow will be the first day of my kindergarten for my son.
That's amazing.
Big step.
Every release, we talk to the lead about the advice that they're going to give to their successor. We spoke with James Leverack for 124, and he said that the advice that he would give to you is that open communication is really important. He was talking about how he was summarizing release teams to Slack and possibly spamming the channel and encouraging you to do the same thing. Was that something you were able to take on board?
Oh, yeah, that's one of the important thing I keep in mind. And I always view the release lead as more like a coordinator role instead of a leading role. So that involves a lot of discussion with others.
Was there any other advice that you picked up through the process that was particularly important to you?
Yeah, I remember one advice I got from Jim is don't underestimate the time. Because I remember he said like, the recommended time spent in the release work, maybe, I don't know, no more than 20 hours or 25 hours per week, but always expect more.
Between the release and the enhancement you were pushing into the release, did you have time for anything else?
I'll say I'm pretty lucky. This release goes very smoothly, and I got a lot of time working on my own features and stuff, but maybe not recent, well, 2 weeks, but earlier, yeah. I'll say the release work is not as much as comparing to towards the end of the release.
For 126, the release lead is going to be Leo Palk. What advice are you putting in the envelope for him?
Obviously, the open spirit and always communicate things through as much as possible. Yeah, that will be the first advice I will give.
What are you looking forward to doing now that this role will be over for you soon?
I'm going to still keep working on the SIG API machinery for sure, and I'll stay in the community around, and maybe I will participate in other areas of the release.
As we mentioned before, your son has played a part in scoping this release out and helping you with its theme. Does he enjoy playing on a computer, or is that something that you need to lock up in a different room?
Obviously, he enjoyed a lot with computers, but currently maybe more of the game side or like video side.
There's still time. Do you think you'll get him involved in the Kubernetes project one day?
I actually kind of hope like one day, like he just searched his name online and found his name appear in the one of the community release blog. And I hope that will be a surprise for him.
Excellent. That's good parenting right there. Thank you very much for joining us today, Cece.
Thank you so much for having me.
You can find Cece on GitHub or the Kubernetes Slack as Cece37. Thank you as always for listening. If you've enjoyed the show, please help us spread the word and tell a friend. If you have any feedback for us, you can find us on Twitter at KubernetesPod or reach us by email at KubernetesPodcast@google.com. You can check out the website at KubernetesPodcast.com where you will find transcripts and show notes, as well as links to subscribe. Please consider rating us in your podcast player so we can help more people find and enjoy the show. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.